Support for this KQED podcast comes from ACT, presenting Let There Be Love, a moving and comic drama about how an aging father and equally headstrong daughter find one another. Opens April 8th at the Geary Theater, act-sf.org.
Good morning. I'm Queenie Kim, and this is the California Report. The vaccination bill in Sacramento jumped a big hurdle yesterday. It requires most students enrolling in public and private schools to be vaccinated. After delaying the vote because of pushback to the bill, it sailed through the Senate Education Committee by a 7-2 vote. The vaccination bill heads to the Judiciary Committee next week, where it's expected to pass. San Francisco banned the use of wild animals as entertainment earlier this week. That means exotic animals can't be used in circuses, movies, parades, carnivals, no chimpanzees at birthday parties, none of it. And while the city's law is the most sweeping in the nation, it's not the first California city to go down this road. At least 8 others in the state have already banned circuses. Lori Gruen is a professor at Wesleyan University in Connecticut, and she focuses on animal ethics.
The legislature in California and the people of California have been really quite progressive in rethinking how to reevaluate and rethink our relationships with other animals.
Circus companies and movie makers say state and federal laws already regulate the treatment of exotic animals in their industry, and they say the animals are being treated humanely, so this law is unnecessary. But Gruen says this latest debate has moved beyond whether animals are being treated well.
But there's some animals, like the orcas and like the elephants, that are just going to suffer even if they're not treated in horribly abusive ways, that they're going to suffer because they're in captivity.
Gruen says research and the public's growing awareness of it is driving this thinking. It's revealing that many animals have higher thinking and emotional skills than we previously thought. Talking about the end of life with patients is difficult, say many doctors. But when a person is of a different ethnicity, that conversation becomes even more difficult. That's a finding of a new study out of Stanford. The California Report's health reporter April Domboski explains.
Dr. Vijay Periyakoil outlines a typical scenario that's troubling to doctors. She describes a 65-year-old patient, an Asian woman who is smart and thinking clearly. But whenever the doctor asks her a question, it's always the patient's eldest son who answers.
As a doctor, I would really struggle with what to do with in a situation like that, where you can't really, the patient has no voice, if you will.
Periyakoil is the director of palliative care training at Stanford's medical school. Her study found 85% of doctors they surveyed face obstacles when talking about the end of life with patients from different ethnic backgrounds.
The number one barrier was language and medical interpretation issues.
The second was religious beliefs.
The family might come back and say, no one knows when a person is going to die. That's in the hand of God.
She says in some Asian cultures, even mentioning the word death is taboo.
It's not uncommon for the patient and family to feel that by talking about something, you might be invoking it. So by talking about death, you might be tempting fates.
Periyakoil is experimenting with a possible solution. She's asking patients at Stanford to write letters to their doctors in their own language, in their own words, about what matters most to them at the end of life. For the California Report, I'm April Domboski.
Suicide among techies and hackers has been bubbling up as an issue this tech boom, and there are a lot of theories as to why. Two researchers from UC Berkeley and UC San Francisco decided to study this issue. Their question was, is there a connection between mental health and entrepreneurship? They didn't quite nail down the answer, but some of their findings were surprising nonetheless. KQED Silicon Valley editor Beth Willon reports.
Michael Freeman, a clinical professor of psychiatry at UC San Francisco and his partner at UC Berkeley, gave an online survey to 242 men and women who founded or co-founded businesses in Silicon Valley, Los Angeles, New York, and Texas. The replies, which were kept anonymous, revealed that nearly half had one or more mental health conditions, including attention deficit, hyperactivity disorder, bipolar conditions, depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. But Dr. Freeman says the study suggests some of the positive traits associated with mental health conditions may be part of the secret sauce of entrepreneurial success.
Those people in the bipolar spectrum can be visionary, innovative, charismatic people that have unlimited energy and inspire the confidence of investors and customers and staff.
I spoke to one 36-year-old successful entrepreneur from San Francisco who participated in the study, but asked that we not use his name. He says his bipolar and attention deficit disorder made it hard to work in the conventional business world, but he thrives in the chaos of entrepreneurship.
Willing to take that risk to lead an enterprise, to lead myself, to find a better answer. And I think that's the art, if you will, to being an entrepreneur.
But he also acknowledged that he uses strong medication to help control his emotions. In the past, he says, they've gotten the best of him and made him vulnerable.
Your emotions dictate your day-to-day occurrences and affect your personal life, your professional life.
Moving forward, Freeman says he needs a larger study sample to better understand the connections between mental conditions and the characteristics needed to succeed in the startup world.
If you have mental health conditions, does that make you more likely to become an entrepreneur? Or if you become an entrepreneur, are you more likely to develop mental health conditions?
For now, Freeman wants to take his findings to tech incubators, business schools, and executive coaches to help budding entrepreneurs succeed and keep them healthy and safe. For the California Report, I'm Beth Willon.
And that's the California Report for Thursday, April 23rd, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Queenie Kim. This is the California Report.
Support for the California Report comes from Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. The James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. More at irvine.org. And Digital Foundry, working with leading organizations to jumpstart digital innovation. More online at digitalfoundry.com.